Blog Talk Radio.
This program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Basically, the 1% of the motorcycle community who operates outside the law.
Their total focus is on hatred for the enemy. They have the policy of shoot or kill on sight if they can.
It's bullshit. Law enforcement just tries to paint this picture to the media and just cover up their bullshit, cover up their lies, and I just like to say fuck them. That's straight from Mike P. Jump on your bike, let's.
Straight up 6 o'clock on the west coast, 79 is sunny, slight breeze off the ocean, can't get better than that. The ride was awesome, came up the coast all the way, it was great.
Excellent.
What's going on over there?
Well, our governor tried to assign for a ban on the conceal and carry in public, but he was outvoted. So now it pertains to the rest of the group, which most likely will pass. You'll be able to conceal and carry in public. But they're also talking about, because there's so many killings taking place in Chicago,
right,
be careful, because the National Guard is soon to come.
Yeah, I heard that.
Crazy.
That's how it starts. They already asked those guys if they had any problem shooting Americans.
Exactly, you know. And, you know, there's a lot going on that people don't even realize, and they're not even caring. I don't get it. You know, because once the National Guard comes in, if they do, because of all the shootings that take place in Chicago, that's it. It'll be a matter of time.
Well, you know why, don't you?
Yeah.
All right. Here's the guy that's going to tell you all about it.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value. So,
exactly.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Dude, but there's
the
another guy here.
Statement.
Yeah, there's another guy here.
Where is thy salute? For presenting yourselves on this battlefield. I give you thanks. This is our army. To join it, you give homage.
I give homage to Scotland. And if this is your army, why does it go?
We didn't come.
come here to fight for them.
Oh, the English are too many.
Sons of Scotland, I am William Wallace.
William Wallace is 7 feet tall.
Yes, I've heard. Killed men by the hundreds. And if he were here, he'd consume the English with fireballs from his eyes and bolts of lightning from his arms. I am William Wallace. And I see a whole army of my countrymen here in defiance of tyranny. You come to fight as free men. And free men you are. What will you do with that freedom? Will you fight?
Fight against that?
No!
We will run!
And we will live. Die. Fight and you may die. Run and you'll live. At least a while. I'm dying in your bed many years from now. Would you be willing to train all the day from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives,
but they will never take our freedom.
That's what we need. Just imagine if I could get everybody that rides a bike in the United States to come together for just one day, we could shut down the country.
Well, the truckers did in the 70s.
So how was Bermuda there, buddy?
It was quite the party.
Wait, is that why you didn't call in? You got gassed or what?
No, it's just that out there they do, because I don't drink, you know, but out there they do, like, happy hour, and then you go out to eat, and then every restaurant has live entertainment, and it breaks down into a club. I was, like, dancing and out clubbing for almost, like, 7 days in a row till I came home to my best friend's birthday party and danced for 4 hours consecutively. They thought I was nuts. I'm like, I'm already in the mode of dancing. But
yeah,
it's awesome. I'm going back next year.
Good.
It's quite the little place.
Good. So you had fun. Where's the picture?
Fun wasn't the word. I'll send you guys some of the personal.
Hey, wait a minute. She did post a picture of her grabbing a butt.
Oh, that was my best friend Nancy, man. Yeah, we got into the British phone booth, and we were at a restaurant called the Frog and Onion, because Bermudians are known as onions, because that's what grows on the island. And they had been drinking. We'd been dancing, drinking, watching a show, and I was just like, well, I'll get me a picture of I got a piece of ass while on the island. And that's what I titled it as. I got me some great ass, you know. It is what it is. But no, I had a fantastic time. I think I got 4 hours of sleep a night, but they were four of the soundest hours I think I've ever had in my life, man. I came home, and within 2 days of being back to the same old shit. Stress levels up, sky high. I can't. And Bermudians talk like this, okay, the island natives. If you're going to have a beer, it's a burr. If you're going to sit in a chair, it's a chur. And they have this distinct accent that's kind of funny. And they're very, like, laid back. It's like you don't rush. There's no rushing. Everything's just chills. That's pretty much it. And I don't know. The water was incredible. And that's about that, I guess. I don't know. We got Portuguese man-o-war is down here in Massachusetts off the coast, off one of our bigger beaches. And we went to the beach yesterday to find out that another beach adjacent to the one we were at has them over there. We're about a half a mile away. I was like, that's great. But they're just being a menace right now. They're huge. They're colorful, but huge.
Yeah.
They hurt. Have you ever been stung by one?
I ducked the other day. I got hit by a June bug.
Damn, did you get a bruise?
No, it just kind of molded.
Oh,
What?
You ain't seen nothing till you see them damn flying cockroaches. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was like getting, it actually stuck and knocked my head back.
Jesus. Yeah, them flying cockroaches are out of control. Every night we would return home and Flea would come down our driveway, take a right into her backyard. She'd turn them high beams on and she'd scan the house looking for the vomit hanging outside there. And one night we rounded the corner and one happened to fly on the car and I freaked. I was screaming. She jacked up the car in reverse, took off, went flying down the road. She's like, the wind will get him off the car. I was like, Jesus Christ, I don't think there's anything left living on the car. The way she took off. And the drivers are crazy. Those British drivers are crazy. The steering wheel's on the wrong side, the driving's on the wrong side, and they turn on the wrong side, and it's nuts. It's complete chaos. Mopeds have the right of way. Mopeds can go around the car. There's no passing lanes or sidewalks, so you pass on the oncoming traffic, but the cars can't pass. Just the moped scooter things can. No, they're nuts. Those drivers are crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's, they're crazy out here too. Ever since, we got some shit going on where the highway patrol put out some guidelines for splitting lanes.
Yeah.
And it was like it opened the floodgates because every stupid motherfucker in the car decides they want to do something stupid. They open the door, they throw shit out the window. They won't let you in. Yeah. And people wonder why I carry a hammer.
No doubt.
But yeah, you know, I don't know. It's just, it's crazy all around. But ever since they did that and opened the floodgates, all kinds of motherfuckers are doing stupid shit. Because basically only a dog knows why it sticks his head out the window.
Say that again about out the window.
I said that's why
only
a dog. Only a dog knows why it sticks his head out the window.
Yeah. That's a $99 million question right there.
Well, you know, it's just it's crazy every day, man. Shit, stupid shit, just every day. So what else happened while you were down there?
Well, there are some things that I'm going to keep of personal nature. You know, I don't want to reveal all my vacation and no, get your mind out of the gutter, Nora. I know where you're going. I heard you giggling.
No, I wasn't thinking anything like that at all. I just thought it was funny the way you said it.
But it's your story. You tell it any way it sounds good.
I tell it anyway.
Whatever.
The main street is called Front Street, and it reminded me of New Orleans because everything's up on the second floor. Everything has a balcony. And if your restaurant don't have a balcony, it's just not cool. And smoking, man. Oh, my God. And I'm not talking smoking reefer. I'm talking smoking cigarettes. The cigarette rate out there is out of control. Every restaurant has a place for you to smoke. No, hands down, they do not make a big ordeal out of smoking the way us Americans do. They do not make a big deal out of everything. It's just laid back. I'm telling you.
That's cool.
If you need a place to not have no worries, that's the place to go. But there's no franchises out there at all. They don't allow it because franchises take money away from the island. Every place of business there brings money to the island. The resorts there range from $800 to $2,000 a night, not
wow.
a week, a night. Yeah. They ain't playing when they say they're making money for the island because they sure as hell are. I mean, everything is pricey, but organic and good. I you know, I have to give them that much credit. Everything they cook is just amazing. We went on a glass bottom boat ride and got to see where the Vixen sank and how only, I think it was, they said in 1987, a group of Americans came down to try to figure out why the coral reef there was growing at a rapid rate. Well, that's when they discovered that iron added to the water makes coral reefs, makes the coral grow at a rapid rate, and thus set the trend for taking ships and dropping them to the bottom of the ocean floor, because iron is one of the substances the coral needs to survive. So I learned many different things about coral, and it's also a stinging type of coral. That this dude, I guess they had on a boat ride one time, decided to jump off in the water, throw his clothes off, swim naked under the glass bottom boat, get his clothes, and decided to steal a piece of coral. Now, if you get caught on any of the beaches with any of that coral stuff in your hand, you're looking at a major fine, and like the locals will jump your shit and put it back in the water. You're getting into some trouble. They don't even play with that stuff. But this dumbass on his honeymoon, after he, you know, showed off his nakedness under the glass bottom boat, got into his pants and then decided to take that stinging coral and shove it down in his pants. Yeah. Needless to say, by the time he got from the water back up onto the boat, he was in tears. And he was also in jail, and he was also fined big, big money. And he's, like, basically blacklisted. He can never come back to the island again. And I just want to share this with you, Phil, because I was cussing you out the whole time it was happening. We were the last ones off the plane, the motherfucking last ones, because everybody's just – in Bermuda, you have to walk down the stairs, take your luggage with you. They don't have none of these attachable things like they do at international places. You old school in it, and that's it. Last two in, fill out our papers for fucking customs. People are going through customs, and then all of a sudden they point to me, you. I'm like, me? They're like, you, come over here. What's your name again? And I'm like, oh, my God, here we go. They searched me from head to toe, took everything out of my luggage, took everything out of my carry-on bag.
So where'd you hide it?
I didn't hide anything. I didn't bring anything. I wasn't fucking playing with – I wasn't going to be out of my country and play by somebody else's rules. That ain't happening. I didn't do anything that would have broke anything. And the guy is going through my stuff, and he says, when I'm done, you can go over there to the duty-free shop and get yourself some good alcohol. No, he says this to me after he asks me, do you have any drugs or alcohol hidden in your suitcase? And I'm scratching my head going, is this a fucking catch-22 if I leave this area? Go over there and buy a bottle and put it in my bag. Am I going to get in trouble? I mean, yeah, they went through all my shit. And going down to the island, I had, I guess, what you would call biker apparel on, and it wasn't any type of show of anything. It was a Holly Davidson t-shirt from the Holly shop that found the road for me. Jeans, you know.
You just look guilty.
You fucking ain't right, I guess. But when they stopped us, and like, you know, the guy's asking us who's picking you up, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. Now, Carolyn at this time is outside waiting on us, and she's watching the time go by because they don't allow you into that portion of the airport. You have to wait for your people. And she's like, oh, shit, they got detained by customs. And she's praying my mouth ain't running because I guess they don't even deal with it. If you stop running your mouth, they make you leave. And I was good. I was fucking good. Yeah, they don't deal with it. They don't put up with stupidity. And, you know, I just rose with the punches and laughed even though I wanted to scream and joked even though I wanted to punch somebody in their mouth. And I just, yep, thank you very much. Have a nice fucking day. And went on our way. And then I ran out the airport screaming flea at the top of my lungs and threw my suitcase and gave her a big-ass hug. And then went on the crazy ride from hell in the backwoods car. But... Nah, they'll play. At least down there. I don't know how it works anywhere else, but customs in Bermuda don't play. But what I thought was a little bit, how do I put this, prejudice, was that we were the only two people they checked. I'm the biker, and my friend's a Puerto Rican. What do you think? What do you think was going through their head? I know what the fuck was going through their head. I know what it was, and they were wrong. Straight up wrong. So,
yeah. Well, The last time I went to Mexico, and I went to Mexico City, I went through customs in Houston, and they asked me where I was going, and I told them. But of course, the way I was dressed, I got the same thing. And the one guy said, some lieutenant said to me, "So what are you going to Mexico for? What do you do for a living?" I said, "I'm a pipe welder." He said, "Oh, you're going to clean your pipes?" Absolutely. But they never totally frisked me. They went through my shit and patted me down, but they never found what I was carrying either.
No, I wasn't
sure if the med card was going to work going that far south.
Yeah, that's, you know, and believe me, because there was a couple of things that customs officers said to me that normally in the States, you probably would have got punched in the face. Honest to God, you know, because I have zero tolerance for stupidity. But I realized I wasn't in my country anymore. I was under their rule, and this was custom, you know. And all the horror stories I've heard from people, I was like, Stacey, shut your mouth. Just shut your mouth and smile. And police said to me, she said, that's probably why they detained you. She said, you had that goddamn permagrim going because you landed on the freaking island. She says they were like, oh, get that one. She's too happy. I was like, oh, God. You know, but, that portion was true. I smiled the whole plane ride, you know, coming down, getting out of the plane, filling out the customs paperwork, standing in an hour-long line, and then getting detained. Yeah, I still had permagrin going. So, but here's food for thought, Phil, for all you smokers out there that like to engage in the ganj a little bit. A quarter down there goes for over $200, and we all know if you're a smoker, you know a quarter ain't shit. So that's where the price range starts from there. And like, what goes around is like little, I don't know.
Well, I'm sure the guys out in the van in front of the house appreciate that one.
Hey, you know what? It's legal here where I live, so you know I don't have a problem talking about it. But
I don't either. I fought for this country. I did a few things. I think I'm entitled to it. But
yeah.
I'm gonna bring on some people. You know, we had Chris on, and we talked about PTSD. So
yeah.
He put the word out, and there's some people on the horn. So I'm gonna give these guys. We're gonna talk about that and see what's going on because everybody knows that we get shit on as vets every day.
Yeah.
I mean, it shouldn't take me 9 months to get an appointment at the VA, but it does.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
I think this first caller from 252, this should be Mick. Is that you, Mick?
Yeah, it is.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. How you doing, man?
Can't complain. I'm watching the sun go down over the mountains.
I hear that.
And then I think we got... We got Crystal, 904?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm on.
Okay.
Yep.
So, I just gave a little quickie on, basically you guys wanted to talk about the PTSD, which we all deal with. I deal with it, Bill deals with it, we deal with guys in and out every day, and Bill deals with it daily at his shop because like you said, a lot of guys come in and they haven't ridden for a while and they've been out of the lifestyle for a little bit and they just move along at their own pace and then a couple, three times they go to the shop, they start opening up, start talking about things. So it kind of works out because Bill's shop is like a sanctuary. It's basically, sometimes, you know, club guys go there and the cops will follow them in. And Bill stops them at the door, and if they want to look at motorcycles, they're more than welcome to come in. But if they want to come in and hassle somebody, they're not welcome.
But right, and you know, when it comes to the PTSD, most of the vets in my experience don't really understand it. And that's one of the biggest problems that we're having right now. You know, we're fighting this battle with PTSD, and we're not the first, you know, the first war that wartime vets has ever, you know, dealt with it. I mean, it's
no,
you know,
in World War II, they used to call it
from World War I, and you know, bomb shock and everything else, you know, and you know, the statistics are out there. I mean, it says that right now there's 10 to 30% of all military, you know, vets that come home are diagnosed with PTSD. And, you know, that's a whole bunch when you really stop to think about it. And, you know, we're talking about 11% of the vets returning from Afghanistan have it, and 20% of the ones coming back from Iraq are having it. You know, it's just too many people. You know, essentially that's one out of every five military personnel that returns from Iraq or Afghanistan has and is suffering from PTSD. You know,
right.
And it's too much.
It's too much, and the problem is that nobody gives a shit.
That help, right.
And that is true. You know, the unfortunate part about it is, you know, being in uniform for so long, you know, we crave, like you said earlier, that camaraderie, that unity, that, you know, that sense of belonging. And with that, you know, a lot of us go towards motorcycles or something that, you know, we live on the edge for, and, you know, we join motorcycle clubs. And as a matter of fact, I'm with I'm a peer mentor for the Warriors, and I'm also with the Middle War Motorcycle Club out of Jacksonville, Florida. And our mission for our club is to help vets. And, you know, what that does for us is that empowers us. It empowers us individually to give us that opportunity to fit in, to find a niche, and to be able to open up with our brothers that, you know, like we used to do in uniform. And, you know, trying to mend back in the civilian world is really tough.
Yeah, it is. It is. I went through a lot of shit myself. It is. And every day is a challenge. I mean,
right. And,
I go,
you know, one of the...
Well, I work on the Navy base in San Diego. I work on
right
all the ships. And right now I'm working on the Essex. And I see things, and you can just tell. Guys that have been in the shit and guys that haven't been in the shit. And the ones that are talking or that I listen to don't even know what the fuck they're talking about. They don't have a clue. I just think
their sense of belonging, I suppose. And we, you know, we encounter that all the time over here, and that's what's unfortunate because, you know, there's a lot of guys that just, you know, they want to be like us, but yet we're the ones that say, you know what, I'm so glad you're not like us. Because, you know, even in the workplace, they don't understand. They all want to be your friend. They all want to hear the stories, but when it comes down to it, they don't want to listen. For example, I just got fired from my job because my job supposedly said that they're, you know, 100% ADA, you know, compliant, which is the American Disabilities Act. Right. And, you know, I was up front. I told them about, you know, different things about what was going on with me. And I still got terminated because I lost my cool a couple times. And, you know, unfortunately, it was in the middle of changing meds. And you know how the VA is. All they want to do is dope you up. And, you know, and they fired me. And we need, as veterans, we need to go out there and we need the general public to understand that we, you know, we do have difficulties trying to adjust. We do have difficulties dealing with civilians, especially the dumbass civilians, you know, and the morons out there that we just have, you know, all those issues with. And that's, you know, we need to make people understand that, hey, don't throw a firecracker by my car because you're probably going to get shot. And, you know, that happened to me the other day. Some guy threw a firecracker next to my Jeep, and I went off the road and everything else. I'm thinking, you know, contact right. And, you know, here's the city throwing fucking firecrackers. And, you know, with that in mind, you know, the general public needs to understand that, you know, there's a lot of us out here, and they don't know us, you know, from the man on the moon of us, where, you know, we're wearing something that says, I was over in country or whatever, in which we never do. But, you know, there's a lot of us that are, you know, real screwed up.
Yeah.
And literally every time there's Memorial Day, 4th of July, like, they're medicated and knocked out because they can't listen to any of that stuff. Like, it brings back memories and everything else. And like he was saying, it's really hard for civilians don't understand it. They just look at people like, what's your problem? Like, what's wrong with you? And they don't get it and they don't understand it. And I don't know, maybe if you could just kind of mention, like, some of the signs, because we've had a lot of people that come back and they don't want to talk about anything. Or they try to transition in civilian life, and like you said, they don't make it. And then it's like, what do you do with them? You just push them to the side?
Right. And what we need to do as combat, you know, vets, we need to reach out to the younger guys and tell them that it is okay to talk. You know, just because I'm tattooed and pierced and everything else, it doesn't mean that, you know, I have emotions and feelings about what happened over there. And, you know, I'll be the first one that could say, like the guys in my club, my brothers in my club, I have cried with those guys more than once. And that's what our club is all about. We're out there trying to do stuff for our fellow vets, as well as trying to fix us, you know, trying to fix ourselves. And that's so, so important. That's why we need to just get our vets involved with something.
Hey, Philip?
Yeah.
I have a troop that, I'm actually, she was in my unit, and she just got out because she has PTSD, but she's trying to call in, too. It's a 210 number. I don't know if it's coming.
I don't have a 210. The 904 has got a lot of static in the background. But she hasn't called yet. But, so ladies, right now we have Crystal and Mick on the line, and my regulars are Stacy and Nora. So you guys got any questions for these guys?
Well, what I'd like to know is, I know people that have suffered from the post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, in regards to, and it could be Mike, or it could be, I'm sorry, I forgot your name, the nice
Mick.
Lady. Anyways,
Crystal and Mick.
Crystal and Mick, I'm sorry. Anyways, now, when you guys come back, are you diagnosed before you come back, or is it after when you come back, and how much of an issue is it to get through to the VA to get any kind of help without being doped up all the time? Because that's not the answer.
Well, it took me, believe it or not, it took me about 3 years to really be diagnosed, because you know, I just thought I was just pissed off of the world. And I just thought, you know, well, you know, my heart is hard, and, you know, you really don't realize it until, you know, people start saying, hey, man, there's something wrong with you, dude. I mean, you don't have to fly off the chain. You know, you don't have to do this. You don't have to do that. Like, you know, like I thought was okay and acceptable. And that's the hardest part is getting that diagnosed and just being able to listen and say, yeah, you know what, there's something wrong with, there's something different about me.
Okay.
Yeah, and I was
going to say, when we come back, the only thing that we usually have is
like a questionnaire form that we fill out. So you might come back and you're still trying to figure out how to transition back into civilian world, which any deployment, that's like hard to do, period. So as soon as you get back and fill that out, and all of a sudden,
problem. People don't want to come back and be like, oh, by the way, well, I think something's wrong with me. So lots of them let it go until they get like disciplinary action or something else might happen.
Yeah, so, we've had wives call up and say, hey, Bill, I need some help because this is happening, da 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 da. So from time to time, we'll do an intervention.
And if I could add on to that, let me tell you something. The ones that are mostly affected by the PTSD are our spouses and our kids. And that is the hardest part about this, you know, this PTSD thing, because we don't realize that we're just being complete asses. And, you know, but our kids realize, you know, the wife has to shelter us, you know, hey, daddy's in a bad mood today, or, you know, dad had a bad night last night, stand by. You know, that can't be, you know, we, and that's what's hard, you know, wives have, I believe, have it more difficult than us.
Mm-hmm.
I know my wife does.
Yeah, I agree with that, because you see a lot of people, they'll get divorces, or, like you said, their spouses are coming in, or domestic violence has been, like, a big one. Are their behaviors just completely just off?
Right. And, you know, the biggest part about PTSD, too, is the suicide rate. Suicide,
yep,
amongst veterans with PTSD is almost 25%. And right now, according to statistics, they're showing that there's one serviceman or woman that comes home from combat that is committing suicide once a day. That's too many. You know,
yeah, I had one, the 19-year-old girl, do that at work.
Oh, yeah, you told me about that. Yeah.
It sucks.
Yeah.
But
they
like
really,
I said, you know, we have to have
they really
an
don't know what to, you know, they really don't know what to look for.
No, and we have to, you know, we have to give them that outlet. And, you know, my saving grace is my club. And, you know, we have chapters pretty much across the United States. And I urge other listeners, you know, that are out there and other vets, hey, look up Men of War Motorcycle Club. And you know what? Or get involved with something.
That's why a lot of times, you know, when they come down to the shop, you know, we've been around this for a while, so the last 10 years, 11 years, we pretty much know what to look for. So we
right.
just give a guy, like, they'll come in and they'll be standoffish a little bit, you know, and then they'll come, we just let them come to us.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, a lot of people don't realize that the person's actually reaching out for help. I had a guy came up to me, and he was just basically like, I don't know what's wrong with me, but I feel weird, like I feel out of place, and I was like, okay, and it continued, and I mean, this is someone that was like, he's listening right now, I'm not going to say his name, but he's completely, like, squared away, like, excellent troop, and all of a sudden, he just came to work one day, and he was just segregated, like, by himself, and he was saying that he couldn't adapt back to society, and
She didn't know why he felt angry all the time. So it's other people too that they don't have the training and they don't really understand what to look for, like you said. But some of them
we got a guy that got out
stuff.
Like I told you, got out last October. He's still waiting to get his meds.
Yep.
And it doesn't just hit enlisted personnel. That's one of the things that, you know, it's like, well, you remember the back in the days when it used to be suck it up, you know, suck it up. Well, we can't suck it up anymore. And the senior, even from, I mean, it doesn't matter what rank you are in your car. And, I mean, we had an officer, a former Marine officer, that sucked started a pistol not too long ago. And, you know, and that's a tragedy. And that's what we need to make people aware of. Because there's too much death here, you know, stateside.
Right.
Are there, like, support groups or people that can reach out to speak with any of the vets that may help?
Yeah, the Wounded Warriors, if anybody out there is listening, the Wounded Warriors Project, believe it or not, is fantastic. Myself, the president of our chapter, we're both alumni for the Wounded Warriors. They've taken us out. We've gone swimming with dolphins. We went deep sea fishing. You know, we've done all kinds of cool things here in Florida with the Wounded Warriors Project. And my wife and myself are both peer mentors for it. And, you know, that's what we're trying to do is we're trying to give back to our other vets that, you know, that need the help.
Yeah, we're taking six guys to Mexico with us this weekend. And Bill and I are going to be the MCs of this event. And basically, we're going to get these guys, get them comfortable first, you know, and then I'll probably enlighten their days when I make them all judges in the wet T-shirt contest, but we'll see what happens.
Oh,
well, we got the caller from 210.
Yeah, Brittany.
210, you're live.
Hey, Brittany.
Uh-huh. Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
Hi.
Your name, please?
How are you? My name is Brittany Street.
Brittany?
Yeah.
Okay.
She was in my unit.
Yeah, we got Mick, we got Crystal, we got you. The other 904, he's on 558. I'm getting a lot of static when I bring you on. I don't know what the problem is, but I'll try it again in a minute. And then we have Nora and Stacy. Nora's in Chicago. Stacy's in on the border of Massachusetts and Rhode Island. And right now, just around the world, you guys, just to give you an idea of what's going on here, we have, let's see. Just right now, we got one guy listening in China. We got the Philippines, Indonesia, Russia, France, Germany, Australia, the United Kingdom, Canada. Argentina, Finland, Germany, Philippines, Netherlands, Belgium, and India. So we're pretty much all over the place. People are listening to this right now. So go ahead, and Brittany, you're up. Whatever you wanted to discuss.
Okay. Well, my biggest thing is trying to find the resources. Of course, I moved back. Like I was in Florida after my deployment. I was actually diagnosed with PTSD while I was still deployed. A lot of people don't know that if they experience tragic events at a small, like at a really young age, say, you know, like for me it was 7, they really don't know what it is. And then you go to I went to 2 deployments with 2 other traumatic events, which actually increased it for me. People walk around with it every day and don't even know they have it, like you guys were saying. I got married when I got back. You know, I'm still trying to figure out. He doesn't understand it. My husband doesn't understand it. Sometimes he aggravates it for me, and it's hard to explain it to him and not feel like the bad guy. Like, okay, obviously something's wrong with me, you know, when sometimes it's just helping him to understand what he can and cannot do anymore. Like, there were things before our deployment that I could, that we could do, that I had no problem with, that has completely changed since I got back. And so I'm trying to find an easy balance with that. But also, like you said, with the VA, they over-medicated me with two separate drugs. I think Wellbutrin and Prozac or something. I forget. Or no. Starts with a V. I can't remember. But they had me on double dose Zoloft. Yeah, they had me on double dose of Zoloft and a double dose of Wellbutrin, which I didn't know because I was just following the doctor's orders. Where of course everything went to crap and I started having suicidal thoughts and stuff like that, even though I've never done that in my whole life. And they said, if this ever happens, because this is a side effect, call me and let me know. So I called the hotline like they told me to and said, I just need to go talk to my doctor. My doctor's not available. It's a weekend. Like, I'm scared because it's freaking me out because I've never dealt with anything like this. You know, I've never had those thoughts. I've never had those problems. Nothing. And so they told me I had to go to the nearest emergency room. So I'm like, okay, well, that's an hour for me. So I drove an hour. I told them what was going on. And they said, okay, we'll get you the help that you need. And here I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to see a doctor and they're going to be able to, I said, all I need is a prescription change. I know it has to do with my medication because I've never been like this before. Next thing I know, I'm basically on lockdown. They put me in a yellow jumpsuit, which I saw every day at a prison camp, and I told the lady, do not put me in that. You know, I was overseas for almost a year with detainees that wore orange and yellow. I don't want to be around that. You know, I still hate those colors to this day. And she did anyway. I had a panic attack. They wouldn't change me out of them until they came to find out what was going on an hour and a half later. And then that nurse yelled at the other lady for putting me in them. And then the next morning, they're like, well, we don't have any place for you here. We have to send you to Augusta, Georgia. So I get sent to Augusta, Georgia. And next thing I know, I'm getting wheeled into a mental institution, like their psych ward. And I had nothing wrong with me. Like, I wasn't a harm to myself or anybody else. Like, and it freaked me out. So now it's like I'm afraid to even tell them anything that's going on.
And in the military part, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, they Baker-acted you.
Huh?
They Baker-acted you.
When I went to Augusta, they told me that I should have never been sent there. I should have never been put anywhere. That I wasn't a danger to... It was only when you're a danger to yourself or others, which I wasn't.
Right.
And it said it in my file, and then they just made it worse by doing that to me.
But the problem, you know, the problem is they don't know how to handle it. They don't know what to do, so they just pass the buck.
Well, they said that was their procedures. I said, well, that's your procedures for someone that's a harm to themselves or somebody else, but I never was, ever. And
well,
I was prescribed anxiety medication, and they refused to even give it to me when they gave me a panic attack. So it's like I live here with my husband's family who, you know, I mean, they're great, but all my friends and family are in Florida. I'm away from everything. I don't really know anybody, you know, and it's hard to feel completely alone with no resources, you know?
Yeah. No,
do you live in the Jacksonville area?
No, I
she
live
did.
In South Carolina.
Yeah, she
South Carolina?
Huh?
Yeah, I'm sure that we'll pass numbers or something, and I'll get you some information about the Wounded Warriors. I'll find somebody up there in your area.
Okay.
I have a Marine in South Carolina that does that.
Yeah, the Baker Act thing in November, 2 days before Thanksgiving, I went to the VA. I kind of felt good, but I was in a really dark place. And I was having survivor's guilt is what it was. And
right.
I told the VA doctor, I said, hey, look, you know what? If I could, and I utilized the words very carefully and I articulated it extremely well, what I thought, I said, if I could, I would run my bike into a wall at 100 miles an hour to give my Marines one more day home with their kids for Thanksgiving. As soon as I said that, I was in handcuffs, and I was getting shipped over to Halifax, and I was in a rubber room. I mean, and you're right. You're just so they don't know how to deal with us. And the best way to do it is lock them up. Lock them up and lock them up fast.
Right, but then they lock you up with, like, people that have serious mental problems. Like, this girl was sitting at the end of my bed just screaming. And then these other people were like, I'm the devil 1 minute. You know, and I'm like, I don't belong here. Like, these are for serious, fucked up people.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the funny thing was that, you know, after I was released, they made me go back to my shrink over at the VA, and he says, did you get anything out of it? I said, yeah, I got three good things out of it. You know, he's like, oh, well, see, I told you it would work. He says, well, what were they? I said, well, I got to see an episode of NCIS I've never seen. I found out that I can eat freaking pudding with a cracker because they want to give me a freaking fork or spoon. And I realized that, you know what, there's some fucking crazy people in this world.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all three things I got out of it, you know?
Yeah.
Well, the problem is...
I'll answer the question. You want answers? I think I'm entitled. You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
My favorite.
Oh, my God.
That's me when I go to the VA.
I understand that when you're scheduled for an appointment and you get there and it's been canceled but nobody called you but you never canceled it but they said that you canceled it. I'm going through all that. I'm still waiting. It's been a year next month since I got married and I still haven't. They can't even change my last name and give me my dependent pay. Or it's still been a year since my disability increase and I still haven't got anything. You know, I'm in South Carolina trying to find a job, and everything says, oh, we hire veterans first, da-da-da, and I have been looking literally since September. I got hired by a company that basically just hires vets to get a tax decrease or whatever, tax credit,
right.
And hires all these people, and then didn't tell me till like a couple days before our test that you would get fired if you didn't pass a test, which to me, I get test anxiety, so that just made me even more nervous. And I knew what I was doing and didn't give me another chance and then said that they would rehire me. And then 2 months later, like a week before I'm supposed to start, they call me and say, oh, we can't hire you. So here I've basically been since September trying to find a job at the unemployment office, at, you know, every kind of military organization, job help, you know, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, you name them. They're all supposed to be able to hire vets, and it's not happening. And it's like, how do you not get frustrated? To me, I offer so much. I have so much experience and so much more to offer. Why can't I just have a chance? You know, so now it feels like I don't have a purpose. I feel completely useless, you know, because it's like I have no path right now, you know.
Because you're a liability.
Yeah, took the words right out of my mouth.
And they know that, because you know what? All we are is a big, giant liability. They say all that fancy shit, but when it comes down to it, they're not going
to
stand by it because we
are
a liability.
They discrimination charges, so they just go ahead and make up bullshit excuses to tell you.
Yeah, it's like, oh, we reviewed your resume, but we went with a different person. Oh,
yeah.
Even though you had excellent skills, we went with somebody else. I'm like, how many of these am I going to get? You know, I'm a hard worker, a very hard worker. I've always been that way. It's like, and you know, I'm still waiting for my medical board and everything else. And I'm like going back to them saying, can I cross train? Can I do a different job that's not deployable all the time? I mean, because at this point, it's like, I feel guilty for leaving, but at the same time, I had to leave for a reason. Because on my last deployment, not the people from my work, but the people from other bases, other guard units or whatever, treated us horribly. like, horrible. Like, I was more worried about what they were going to do to us than I was about the people going on the other side of the wall. Or, you know, I mean, that's just it's what it's coming down to. It's like all the good people are getting out because they can't stand it, and people are getting away with basically mistreating and hurting people all the time, and nothing's being done about it.
No, and a lot of times they send you to someone they think that can help you who doesn't have a fucking clue on what you're talking about when they send you to human resources because they've never experienced.
Well, I mean,
I got guys who come back, they've been gone for a year or two, and they come back to their job, and they're like, they don't fit in right away. And people are like, well, are you mollycoddling? Hey, I'm not. It's just the way it is. If you knew more about the program, you'd understand. But they don't.
Right. Yeah. That's like you're afraid to open, like I know for me, I'm afraid to open up to anybody that I know because I don't know who's going to be able to relate to it or anybody that's going to understand because the people that I have opened up to, you know, especially my husband, like he's the one that is usually the worst person when it comes to setting the ticker off, you know?
Uh-huh.
And he's like, what's your problem? And he'll be like, what's your problem? I'll be like, what part of just stop don't you get? Like, the first or second time's cool, but, you know, 3, 4, 5 times after I've told you just stop, you know, that should be enough. And he doesn't get that, like, my trigger is just, I mean, I don't even know where the anger comes from. I just know that I have a lot of it, and I've done a lot really well within the past, like, I'd say in the past year from where I was when I first got home to where I am now, I feel better. But I know I'm not 100% there yet, you know. I'm learning bits and pieces. But it'll be like, how long is this going to take? Well, I don't know how long it's going to take. It could take 2 years. It could take 10. I don't know. You know,
Brenny, I'll call him. I'll take care of him.
Yeah, well, I mean, Crystal knows firsthand. She sends me something as silly as something on Facebook, and he flips out on me.
Oh, my God, don't even start on that.
It's so stupid.
Don't even start on that.
I know, but that's just what stuff that I deal with. And then,
well, he has his own issue, clearly, and is not supportive of yours because he has his own crap going on. But I try to talk to the Marine in South Carolina and see what he can do for you while you're there.
Okay.
And I'm still here, so whatever's from the unit that you need.
Well,
let me try this 904 one more time. Hello,
904. I don't know who that is. It might be Brian, actually.
588?
904-588?
It might be. Dropped off.
No, he's
562.
Okay. Hello, Eunice.
Hey.
Hey, we're talking about... We're talking about post-traumatic stress disorder this evening. We have Brittany, Crystal, and Mick, as well as Stacy and Nora.
Oh, hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
What's going on?
I know how she feels. I have the same thing right now. That stress.
Yeah.
Your stress?
Oh, yeah. Terribly. I didn't think I was, but I really am because I don't even want to get out of bed anymore.
That's a stressful situation. That's very stressful.
Yeah. Yeah, I just, you know, I wasn't going to call in, and I said, I'm going to call in. I just can't give up. I've got the doctor's appointment and everything for Boston.
Uh-huh.
So we'll just see what happens. It's just that I'm, believe it or not, getting weaker and weaker. And
don't give up. You're a fighter.
Oh, I don't intend to give up. It just gets very depressing. You know, like when I was able to get up and get in the car and drive to go have lunch and stuff like that and not be exhausted. Now I get up, I get dressed to go do something, and I'm exhausted. So it's even the nurse said it yesterday that it's gotten worse, not better, you know.
Uh-huh.
So we'll just see.
Where are they from?
Pardon?
Where are you from?
Massachusetts.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm in Massachusetts. So, but as you said, Phil, I'm a fighter, so I'll survive, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to Brownsburg.
Don't try to do it alone.
Oh, I no, I'm not. I've got a lot of good people behind me, you know. I'm not. I say and I do as I say. And today, Brownsburg called me today.
Uh huh.
And I said to him, what's happening? And he says, well, I'm going to meet with the secretary, you know, of the Senate. And he said, it should go pretty good. And I said, you know, you told me that, what was it, a month ago, 6 weeks ago, that he had like six people he was going to meet with. And I said, you want to know something at Brownsburg? I'm tired of people giving me blowjobs. Well, I thought, he said, what did you say? I said, you heard me. I'm tired of people giving me blowjobs. You know. And he didn't know what to say. He says, Eunice. I says, well, I guess it's better than getting smoke blown up my ass than, huh? He just didn't know what to say. I told Hermes, come unglued. Unglued, you know. I says, don't tell me you're going to do something and then don't do it.
Yeah.
You know, just don't tell me that. I don't want to hear it. I said, I've been hearing this for 13 years, you know. Enough is enough. So he was very apologetic, but I didn't believe that come out of my mouth.
Yeah.
I'm such a lady, you know.
Mm-hmm. Eunice is talking about is she co-sponsored a bill for against child molesters, pedophiles. Now they've been running her around a little bit here and there, telling her they're going to do this and they're going to do that, and that's what she's talking about. She can't believe this guy's doing this bullshit. But I would bring that up to if you can get a hold of somebody in the news over there.
Yeah.
And
I intend to. I intend to tell them all the bullshit that they put you through, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I just can't believe that, you know. Yes, I couldn't believe it. Hey, what do? You can only do what you can do. That's all you can do.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I just don't.
Real quick,
hey.
Brent, if you would, you can hit me up at MICKLUM Facebook, and I'll get you some information and get you a contact for somebody up there. And I think that's all, but I got to get going.
What's the last name again?
LUM. MICKLUM.
Okay.
And hit me up on Facebook, and send me a message, and I'll get you some information, and, you know, we'll get you some help.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, because I only thought Wounded
going.
Warriors dealt with people that were actually injured, like, you know.
No.
Like,
no, that's
or,
what people.
Confession of that.
Yeah, they don't research anything. That's what people think. That's the problem.
All right, well, I have to go with you talking to you guys, but I'll be listening. Thank you.
Yeah,
guys.
Listen, you hang in there.
I will. I'll talk to you guys.
Hang in there.
Do you guys do this every Tuesday and Thursday, or is this just...
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you for talking to me as well. I got to get going, too.
Great, you can call back anytime.
Okay.
All right, I appreciate it.
Bye. No problem. Thank you.
We got married. I don't know who just hung up.
You know, that's too bad. I've heard of that.
They both hung up.
Before.
Oh, okay.
They both hung up.
I'm
Boy,
still
she
here.
Really, she really sounds, I wish there was something I could do for her.
Well, you know, the hardest thing is to understand what they're going through. You know, I had a stepdad that went through NERM, was a POW, came back. Everybody was a gook, you know. And his PTSD was really bad. And not a lot of people understand it. They don't want to take the time with it, you know. All they want to do is shove medicine or, you know, whatever they feel like doing. They feel that they have to contain them like they're a time bomb waiting to happen on anybody around them. It's not the case. You know, it's just taking the time to say, you know, hey, I'm here if you need, you know.
Right.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, too, like with Brittany, my friend that just hung up, another thing is that took, what, all of maybe 10 minutes to give her some type of direction that she needed. So a lot of it is educating people and also pointing them in the right direction. And she's going through the process now of getting out of our unit. And this entire time, it's been, I think, well over a year now, she's had no direction. Like, she's had no information. She hasn't been educated on who to talk to. And within 10 minutes, like, she's already getting resources that she didn't know about.
Right.
So, I mean, that alone is an issue.
It's a big help.
You know?
Yeah.
Right.
You know,
same thing
and
with the guys
that.
On the base. They send guys down to see Bill.
Oh, I bet they do.
Yeah, they send guys down to see. He's there all day, and then usually I get a call, and I'll be there after work, but he does.
Yeah. And even other people, like, I tell her anytime, like, you know, she feels like that or needs to talk, she always talks to me. So it's a matter of finding someone that
wants to listen,
help, and all. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've been overseas, but no, I'm not experiencing what she's experiencing, but I can relate to what she's going through.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's the difference between if she went and just talked to a civilian that's sitting behind a desk and getting a paycheck. They don't really give a shit. They just want to get paid.
Exactly.
Right.
That's what pisses me off about the VA and stuff, you know, because, like, last year there was a vet that, you know, kept telling me he wanted to take his life, you know, and I never met him. I only talked to him a couple of times online, you know, and I didn't know what to do, you know. Actually, it was good that he stated where he was at was true, you know what I mean, and I saved him. And, you know, he's still alive today. It's a godsend, you know.
I remember when you called me about
crying. I've had to be a caregiver to my family, and I just like that. If I could save him, how cool would that be? You know, maybe I shouldn't have done what I did. I don't know. All I know is at that moment, it was he needed to be here. He has a family. He has kids, you know, and if things aren't good with him and his wife, you know, because of what he suffers from, you know, hopefully in time it healed, it helped, I don't know. But the best thing is he's still alive today.
It takes somebody to listen and help. I mean, half the time they just want somebody to listen.
Right.
Like, they just need some type of direction, or it's basically like an outlet or somebody that can relate to them or at least direct them. Like my friend Brittany, she's married to somebody that doesn't understand any of it, so she can't sit at home and talk to him about it.
Right,
yeah.
Because unfortunately, unless if somebody's gone through it in some form or another, they don't have a clue. and they look at you like, what the hell is your problem? Snap out of it.
Yep.
You know, and it's not that easy. You know, it all it takes is an ear, compassion, understanding, and hey, okay, I may not understand fully, but I'm always here for you if you need. I don't care if you got to vent. I don't care if you got to scream, whatever the case may be, or just cry. Who cares?
Yep.
You need to get it out.
That's right.
Well, they do that with compassionate friends, too. You know, they have a hotline, and it's just parents who have dealt with death, no matter how their child died. And they always hook them up to someone that child's death was similar to the same thing as someone that you need to talk to, you know.
Right.
So
that's...
Well, see, this is what I look at. Every state should have something, which they do. But not a lot of people are aware of it, and they don't know where to go.
It's educated.
And thank God, right. And thank God, you know, Phil had you all come on the show, because, you know, one hand is going to help the other.
Exactly, yep.
Well, I mean, you know, this thing here that we do, Bill and I do, it's basically, I don't do this for any recognition or anything. I just do this to help, to make sure that everybody hears what's going on. Tomorrow morning by 10 o'clock.
Something.
Wait, tomorrow morning by 10 o'clock, 25,000 people are going to listen to the archives.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're also talking about, like, educating people, but with me still being in, like, you see these people in one day, and then you see them gone the next, and nobody knows why. So it's just kind of like the person just completely disappears, and they're not getting educated, or, you know, you kind of lost an opportunity for somebody else to come forward and be like, oh, well, you know what, I'm not alone. That person has the same thing I have. And you never see it, and you never know about it, because it's just kind of just shushed away, and then that person's gone.
Right.
And it's really sad. I mean, I think it should be up to that person if they want to share that information, or if they feel the need to talk to other people in the unit that stood next to them for 6 months to a year. And actually, that's another way of helping out your other troops that you're over there with, is talking about it. But it's like looked down upon, like you're different, and or you're going to get kicked out, or people are going to think you're crazy. So it's just silence.
Yeah, it's just like when guys go in and tell their sacco that they got a problem with drinking.
Exactly.
That's why nobody goes.
He's an alcoholic and he has problems, so just stay away from him. And then now they're segregated and nobody wants to talk to him.
Right.
So that's, I mean, it's internal also, like from jumpstart, but it needs to be changed as well.
Yeah.
I'll be right back.
Let me play this. This is, somebody asked me to play this again, so I'm going to. It's George Carlin, The American Dream, and I'll be right back.
Right.
But there's a reason. There's a reason. There's a reason for this. There's a reason education sucks, and it's the same reason that it will never, ever, ever be fixed. Never going to get any better. Don't look for it. Be happy with what you got. Because the owners of this country don't want that. I'm talking about the real owners now. The real owners, the big wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. The politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. Everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pocket. And they own all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear. They got you by the balls. They spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want. Well, we know what they want. They want more for themselves and less for everybody else. But I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interests. That's right. They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table and figure out how badly they're getting fucked by a system that threw them overboard 30 fucking years ago. They don't want that. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. Obedient workers. People who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly shittier jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money. They want your fucking retirement money. They want it back so they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street. And you know something? They'll get it. They'll get it all from you sooner or later because they own this fucking place. It's a big club, and you ain't in it. You and I are not in the big club. By the way, it's the same big club they use to beat you over the head with all day long when they tell you what to believe. All day long, beating you over the head in their media, telling you what to believe, what to think, and what to buy. The table is tilted, folks. The game is rigged, and nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care. Good, honest, hard-working people, white collar, blue collar, doesn't matter what color shirt you have on. Good, honest, hard-working people continue. These are people of modest means. Continue to elect these rich cocksuckers who don't give a fuck about them. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't care about you at all. At all. At all. You know? And nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care. That's what the owners count on. The fact that Americans will probably remain willfully ignorant of the big red, white, and blue dick that's being jammed up their assholes every day. Because the owners of this country know the truth. It's called the American dream, because you have to be asleep to believe it.
So, just had to reinforce the firewall, but other than that, yeah, I mean, the more we talk about this, the more people that listen, it's like being in the front pew at the church. By the time it gets back to the 300th pew, it's a big rumor. Everybody's added to it on the way back. But I don't care about that. As long as somebody starts talking about what we're talking about, people have to realize this is true everyday shit that happens, and nobody cares.
A lot of people don't care. They're only worried about themselves. They don't give a shit about nothing else, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They care about a paycheck. That's it. Yeah. That's a shame.
I see them every day. And then usually on Fridays, they'll have the woman, the ladies' master chief, chew all their ass, and then they'll have the Master Chief chew all the guys' ass, and then an hour after that. Who's that? You okay?
That's not me. Somebody fell. I don't know what that was.
Maybe you just fell asleep again.
No, I'm here.
Okay.
I'm staying awake. I'm trying like hell to stay awake. You know.
Would you like me to play a song to wake you up?
I see that.
Well, you can play anything you want, Philip.
All right. let me play this to wake you up. Do you want to sing
okay.
along?
Okay.
Words are very
easy. Right.
I'll be right
okay.
back.
Thank you.
things out here and there, but try and do that. Give everybody a chance. Some people called in, but they didn't stick around. They hung up. But Crystal, what I want you to do is see if you can get a little more organized. And,
okay.
We'll get a little more organized and get talk to the people before we bring them on, so we can kind of get a little better understanding between me and the person talking, and then we can go from there. How we get things out.
Okay.
But that'll work out pretty good. So, Eunice.
Yes.
So, they were supposed to sign this bill when?
He was supposed to meet with the Secretary of the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like the one that's kind of holding it up. Because she's in charge of the Judiciary Committee now. You know, O'Flaherty's just like the Vice President of the Judiciary Committee. So he said he's meeting with her this week, and she's the one that's got to force it out to be voted on again. We're not worried about it being voted on. We know the House of Representatives and the Senate's going to pass it, but it's just this woman that, imagine that one person holding it up, you know? So he said he was going to meet with her, what's today, Tuesday?
Yeah,
Thursday, and he said he'd get back to me on that, you know. So he's hoping by Thursday that it will be pulled out of the Judiciary Committee. And then after that, it's just a 2 or 3 day thing, you know. It goes to the Senate first because they held it up, and it goes back to the House and then back to the Senate.
Right.
You know, to be voted on. So we'll just see. And I'm hoping it's done before then. I got an appointment the 25th of this month to go in and see the specialist. So, and I'll know after I see him exactly what they're going to do and when they're going to do it. But it's, you know, it's just that I've got very much more weaker,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the last couple of weeks. So, and my heart is gone. You know, it's not given the beats it's supposed to be given. It's you know, it's supposed to be like in a minute. I forgot, what is it, 60 or something like that. And mine's going boom, 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 you know, real fast. And they're trying to hold it down, but the medication they've given me to do that has made me just sick. I can't tolerate it.
Yeah. Hold on 1 second. Crystal.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks for calling in. Thanks for setting that up. And you got my cell phone number, right?
Yep. I appreciate it. And thanks for getting that message out.
Yeah. No worries. Just give me a call next couple of days before Friday.
Okay.
Because I won't be in Mexico. And we'll get
you have fun.
We'll get some set up for next week or even Thursday this week, okay?
Okay, sounds good. You guys have a good night.
You
too.
Thank you, Crystal.
I hope you feel better.
Oh, I will. God willing.
Just stay strong. All right, bye, guys.
All right. So you go ahead.
No, great. Sorry.
So then he'll determine, about the surgery. And I'm sure, because the nurse that comes in every week, her name is Jessica. She was here yesterday, and she said, hey, you know, they got to do something pretty quick, she says, because it's just, you know, it's too rapid.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning it's beating too fast to try to get the blood to the brain, and that's why I passed out. I mean, today we went to my eye doctor because he's got to do laser work on one eye, and I actually fell asleep sitting in the chair. You know, I mean, it's just, I don't get oxygen to the brain, and that's why I fall asleep like that, you know? So, it's, you know, it's just a matter of time, you know? We'll just see what happens. It's just that I feel, it's I'm depressed, number one. Number two, I'm depressed because I can't do anything.
Eunice, what about a pacemaker?
I don't know what they're going to do. You know, I'll know the 25th when I see this gynecologist, and he'll tell me what they should be doing, you know.
Yeah.
And then right after that, I mean, you know, I was told by my primary he might just put me in the hospital that day, you know.
Yeah.
I'm just hoping that I can hold out until then. If not, you know, I'm going to have to go in. My husband wanted to put me in last night.
You're from Massachusetts like me. You're as stubborn as they come. You ain't going nowhere.
Well,
you'll
I don't think he
fine.
Really wants me up there. Put me through a test, you know.
Yeah.
But Paul wanted to put me in last night because he says, I've never seen you like this. And, you know, I try to stay up as long as I could downstairs tonight, and I just says, you know, my body's just saying, get the hell upstairs, you know. Get comfortable.
Well, if you need rest, you take it, and that's it, and just take it slow up until you, you know, go see the doctor and everything and get all that sorted out.
Well, the reason it's not until the 25th was my primary care doctor forgot to leave a referral, and she's over in India.
So
we have to wait until she gets back, which is the 23rd, because if I go on my own, the insurance is not going to pick up the tab. So we've got to wait, you know, for her to come back and send the referral to the cardiologist, you know.
Mm-hmm. It's a damn shame. There shouldn't be no such thing as referrals. You should be able to pick up the phone and call a doctor that you...
I know, but, you know, I can't afford...
Yeah.
Like I told you guys before, the insurance company got us by the balls.
Yeah, they do.
You know. So...
I mean, wait till October.
Obamacare.
Wait till October.
Yeah, I know. Oh, but I'm not going to stay on because I'm getting really short of breath now.
Okay, you go rest, Eunice, and please be careful and safe.
I will, and I'll try to call you.
You go rest, and we'll keep you in our prayers, you know, and we'll be thinking of you, and with luck, all this will just work itself out.
Right.
All righty. When I get better, I'll be like hell again, so.
I know. That's why you're too stubborn to go. We need you here. You're not done yet.
All right. Hey, good night, Phil. Good night.
Good night.
Nora, good night, Stacy. Hey. Good night, everybody, and I'll talk to you later.
Okay.
Good night, guys.
Good night. So what else is going on?
They changed my grandson's surgery date. I don't know if I told you. He's going to be admitted the 29th of this month and then have surgery on the 30th.
Oh, wow.
Now he's crawling, but you can really see how it's affecting him and his motor skills and then his developmental. He kind of drags his right arm as he's, you know, scooting along. It breaks my heart. He's such a good baby, you know, and it just breaks my heart what I see him go through every day, and I hope that everything will bounce back, but he's got a very long road ahead of him.
He's gonna be all right, Nora. Just has
yeah. Oh, I know. It's so hard, you know.
My granddaughter's not even crawling yet, and he's crawling. What does that tell you? He's got determination. He's smart. He's witty.
Mine's walking.
Yeah. Wow, Jesus.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to have to tell my daughter, yo, the babies you're in competition with, you got to get that girl going. Oh, my goodness, that's funny. No, my granddaughter sprang her two bottom teeth. That's about as exciting as it gets this week.
She sprung those, and then we got her walking.
Nice.
Well, you know, he wants to walk. I am not kidding. He's got very strong legs. And he'll, you know, as long as you brace him, he's standing.
He's a strong little man. He's a rock star, Nora. I'm telling you, his name's going to go up in lights. You just gotta give him a little bit, you know.
He's got a slow start, you know, and that's what I look at, and that's why I remind Megan, you know, thank God with her surgery, oh, my God, she's able to eat a full meal. Oh, she must be
happy, no more stomach aches, you know?
No, you know, well, she was scared when she got home, and, you know, it's like, okay, what do you want me to make you? Because I knew she had to be on low fat, and so she's like, no, I'm not hungry. I said, you have to eat, and I'm scared. I said, don't be scared, you know, it's okay. So 7 months of hell just, like, tormented that child. And, but no, she can eat just fine now. In fact, I made one night honey mustard chicken, and she did a Parmesan crust chicken. And then today we just had chimichangas, you know, all fat-free, you know. And we eat salads, all kinds of stuff, you know, and she's not having no issue with anything. It's like, oh, thank God, you know.
Oh, I'm glad that she's feeling much better, because I know when you don't feel good, it just adds to the stress. You know, if you got a little bit of stress going on, it just makes it.
Oh, well, I had to deal with bullshit Monday because she had to go back and see the surgeon, you know, from her surgery.
Right.
And so she asked my ex-sister-in-law if she could, you know, take her. And, oh, sure, no problem. Just do me a favor. I don't want to see your mother. Just have her set everything outside and wait for me outside, and I'll come pick you up. I was so pissed. I haven't talked to this woman in years, you know. And I sat there, and it just festered in me, you know, because Megan was crying, and she's like, you know, I don't know what her problem is. You know, I said, look, all I was going to do is just hold the baby, because Megan wasn't able to hold him yet, you know. And that's what pissed me off. So she sat down. She was on 5 different antibiotics. So it made her nauseated, made her dizzy, you know. And I swear by the grace of God, if anything happens, I'm going to come out there like nobody's business, you know. And but she was okay. I kept checking on her until she got picked up. And I had dealt with my ex-sister-in-law. I'm like, what is your problem? You know, here, she just went through surgery. She needed help, and you have a fucking problem? Get the fuck over it. You know? I don't care about you. I'm worried about my grandson, my daughter. You know? And I told her, I said, keep it up, and you're going to push her away. I know my kid better than you. And when she speaks her mind, ooh, you best remember, she's got a mouth just like me.
Yeah.
Ooh. So that was the end of that. But, yeah, you know, I was just, because Megan was just so upset, you know. She's not feeling well. She couldn't even really handle a car ride decent because she was nauseated.
I have a question for you. How long is Jonathan's surgery going to take? Do they have any idea? Like
5 to 8 hours.
Wow. That's
going to be cool. They already informed her that he's going to have at least 7 blood transfusions during the surgery.
Right, right.
So their car.
Anything from like the shoulders up has a tendency of bleeding a lot. It's just because gravity forces it downwards. But no, I know what you're saying there.
Right. So when they cut him ear to ear, they're actually cutting out his whole entire forehead front. And they're going to shave the bone, reshape it, put it back, put a steel plate in place. They're going to stitch the eyes shut just for the surgery.
Right.
So that way they stay in place.
The 5 to 8 hours, is that with recovery time or is that just the surgery time?
That's the surgery time.
So he can, I mean, yeah, because recovery can last anywhere from 1 to 4 hours. You know, that's going to be a long day for you guys.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm just mortified. My kids are coming in. My oldest will be here only for a couple days, and then she has to get back for work. My son will be here for the whole week, but he's going to remain with her at the hospital.
Right.
I'm going to make the low-fat meals for her, put them in containers, because they said they will have a microwave available for her, you know, because they know she's not leaving the room. And so this way my son can just zip back here, you know, grab a couple of containers each day, you know what I mean?
Right.
So they all eat. He knows he can't stay in the room with her, only my daughter can. People can go in and see on and off. They just, like I said, can't be permanent like she will. Now, the dad's side of the family, there's three of them with the same blood type of his. So a week prior to the surgery, they're going to have them come in. They'll get a blood draw, and they have to make sure everything matches to a T. Otherwise, if not, they will use Life Source Blood Bank out of Chicago. As long as everything goes fine, they will not have to go back in for surgery a month after.
Wow. That's a lot. That's a lot to absorb.
Yeah. And but at least that metal plate that will be holding everything together will dissolve out within a month or two after the surgery. So that is impermanent.
Right.
And then when the doctors release him, he'll have to go through at least an extensive 1 to 2 years of physical and motor skill therapy. Because the way his head is, it is predominant to the left. That's where all the weight is right now, is on the left of his head, okay? So it's hard for him to keep his head straight, you know. But when you hold him and he doesn't have a shirt on, you can see in his spine how everything's favored to the left. So
wow.
We've been working with him, you know, to go a little bit more to the right, but we can't push it right now. You know what I mean?
Right.
We're doing a little bit as we go. But, yeah, he's going to need extensive therapy. So that way they can get him more balanced, you know, where he should be if he didn't have, you know, the cranial
right.
stenosis.
I think he'll be fine. He's a little boy with drive and determination, you know. Given the right tools, I think he's gonna go places, so.
You know, and I know in my heart he's going to be fine. It just breaks my heart knowing what he has to go through with the surgery. You know. But, you know, like I said, the outcome is what will be the best. You know,
right.
So right now he is slower than other kids in some areas, in some degree. But in others, he's advancing like a pistol. You know, it's like, damn. You know what I mean? Ugh.
Right.
It's like, slow down, be a baby. You know? Oof. But, you know, I mean, he has his bad days, you know. And unfortunately, he's not talking yet. He's not trying to, you know. So it's just noises that he makes. And it's okay. You know, they're cute to us. And, you know, but in time he'll speak. He'll get there. It's just a little slow.
Wow. Yeah, and nobody, you know, kids suffer the worst.
Yeah, you know, and don't get me wrong. You know, I wish there was something where children didn't have to suffer on anything. I don't care if it's Down syndrome. I don't care if it's ADD. ADHD, whatever, the cranial stenosis, anything, you know, why have these children suffer? You know, let it be the adults. The adults have been there, done that, you know, and the children haven't even started yet.
Yeah.
That's so sad.
Yeah.
And he's already spoiled by the ice cream guy.
By the way, the two of you, I got you both something. And it's not a goddamn t-shirt, because this comes from the heart. And I just got to find two matching containers to put it in, because it's the exact same thing. But there's a reason why I got what I got for the both of you. I should have a container by the weekend, because I'm looking for something specific. But I will stick the note in with it that says the reason why I got what I got for you both.
I hope it's a turtle.
I would never give you a turtle. Turtles are invasive species, and they stay on the beach.
Those turtles are awesome that you took photos of.
Those are sea, Nora. Those are sea turtles. Those are the size of you, me, and Phil put together. Those are huge.
Wow.
I've never seen the sea or the ocean, so I don't know. They're endangered species. You can't mess with them at all.
Okay.
The sea turtle, little land turtles and stuff, I don't think they're endangered. But the big sea tortoises, which is what I showed you pictures of, yeah, they're endangered. They're trying to do everything they can to save them and have more and more eggs hatch and different things like that. I'll tell you what, though, the people of Bermuda are very, eco-friendly with their island. They're very much in tune with, you know, what it needs, what it doesn't need, how to protect the waterways and all that other stuff. So, you know.
Now, do you mind if I ask you a question? Why is Bermuda considered the UK?
It's because it's under British rule, because Bermuda was founded actually by a crashed slave ship. The slave ships used to go back and forth from, I think it was Africa, the coastline to the deeper part of the south. And it was a ship that sank, and there were women, children, men, military, you name it. And that's how the island was founded. And it actually became a stopping point for the Royal Navy. There's a big Navy thingamajig over there, which is, they no longer stop there, but, they used to, and the slave ships actually would stop in Bermuda and re-food up, get their citrus going, because scurvy ran rapid, and different things like that, and then head on over to the southern states that are in the United States. There's a long, very long, interesting history that goes around Bermuda. And my friend's brother, Johnny, he was so funny. He's like, you're always asking questions. And he's like, all this historical stuff you want answers to. And I'm like, damn straight. I'm like, knowledge is power. But, the island was founded not by natives, not by, you know, original people that lived there. It was due to a ship that sunk, and the people that made it to the island lived. And that's how it happened. Yeah. But
I had no idea, because when you said you were going to the UK, I'm thinking, oh, you're so full of shit.
Bermuda's under United Kingdom territory, British rule, whatever you want to call it, you know, and they've got the Queen of England hung up everywhere over there. So
you had to have a passport to go, because you technically went out of the States.
Yes, ma'am. That's why when I went through customs, I was a good girl.
I didn't realize it would be so difficult.
Yeah. Oh, dude, I didn't realize. I'm like, why are they detaining me? I'm like, I've got a cute face. I don't look that hardcore. I'm like, Jesus. But it's one of them things. And I'll tell you what, getting back into the United States was easy. I just walked up to U.S. Customs, and they're like, hey, welcome back. Go ahead. I was like, I just stood there, and I'm like, now I know why shit goes on in the United States the way it does, because it takes you 2 hours to get into Bermuda, and it takes you 30 seconds to get back into your own country. They, you know,
that's
they didn't,
crazy.
They, They didn't ask me anything. They didn't go look up nothing. They just looked at my passport. They're like, hey, welcome back. I'm like, wow. Yeah,
that's,
I think
something's
got to change. Yeah.
Right.
You know, it is what it is. But
oh, how's your sunburn? Are you better now?
Oh, dude. You know, let me tell you something. The only thing that got deep fried on me that day was one leg, my left leg. We were, every beach has a bar, okay? Every beach
right.
has 2 to 3 bars. You know, this is what I liked about Bermuda. You don't pay to go to the beach. We're over here, people are charging up to $35-$40 to go to these New England beaches. They don't pay. They believe that the salt water is the people's waterway. What you would
right.
pay for when you go to the beach is if you want to rent a chair, rent an umbrella, rent a lounge chair. They have rent. Right on the beach, you can, you know, if you don't come with your stuff, you can rent the stuff. And instead
right.
of the rent, no sand's tracked into your car. But I was under the umbrella because I'm Irish, and that was my thing the whole time I was there. I was like, don't pick on me. I'm Irish. Irish people don't tan. We
no,
are red,
you don't.
We are freckled, and we are white as milk. But I put on my sunblock so I wouldn't blister and land up in the freaking hospital, and stupid me is not thinking of my legs. The sun's setting, and it's just, like, creeping under the umbrella, and I'm like, ah, this is nothing. Get up, go
right.
for a dip in the lagoon, come back, and I'm still thinking it's nothing. Yeah, my ass, it was nothing. When I got home, I couldn't walk. Yeah.
Damn.
Deep fried. It was awful, but they had this stuff on the island, flea. She had it. She sprayed down my leg, and by the next day, it was, like, the burn and everything was gone. And I'm not sure what the hell it was, but I know it's something they don't sell here in the States. Because she was
right.
like, they don't have this back in the States, she says, but trust me, it works. And I'm like, I said, I'd trust the devil himself right now if he said he was going to take the burn out of my leg because it was bad. Yeah, it was bad. But, you know, all is well that ends well. And I had somebody else tell me that, you didn't go to Bermuda. And I said, why not? He's like, I don't know anybody that goes to Bermuda and doesn't come back with a tan. I'm like, bitch, I told you I was Irish and don't tan. And people just don't believe that. It's like, oh, well, you know, it is what it is.
I just felt so bad when you posted that you were so sunburned. I thought, oh, ouch. You know, I don't burn, I tan. So
yeah,
I was like, wow.
I got pictures of it. I have to send you some. Yeah. I look, my one leg looks like a lobster in heat or something. It's just like pain. Yeah, it's bad. It's bad. So
how was the food? Was it good?
Oh, my God. Everywhere we ate was fantastic because everything's fresh. Unless you order beef. Beef is imported. They don't raise cattle on the island. So milk is $10.60 a half gallon.
Wow.
A half gallon, but cigarettes are $8 and change. I don't understand that concept, but that's the way it works, you know. But everything's made with fresh ingredients and organic ingredients because they believe in that over there.
Right.
And people don't, like, overindulge. You know, like, here in America, you'll eat until you're stuffed and wolf down dessert until you're stuffed, and then you
right.
just about roll out the door. Over there, it's not heard of, you know. They just eat for the sake of fill the need and bring the rest home, I guess. I don't know. It's just
right.
they're more health conscious, especially with all the cigarettes they smoke. Yeah, and like a bottle of wine, like Nancy likes that Barefoot wine. I think that's the name of it. The brand name is like Barefoot Moscato. And over here, you can get two liter bottles for like $19.99. Over there, she paid $40 for one
Whoa.
Bottle. Yeah. Every night we went out to eat and we, you know, drank and all that stuff. I mean, I didn't have alcohol. They were telling me I was going hardcore when I put the lemon in my water. They were like, whoa, she's going for broke now. She's going to lemon. And I was
right.
like, bitches, we need to calm the hell down. But every night we went out. To eat between eating cocktails and on your receipt, there's always a tip for the waitress or waiter. And if you really like them, you give them a little bit extra. Was at least
right.
$175 to $250 a night for 4 people.
Wow.
It's not too bad considering where you are, but, you know, it's pricey. I wouldn't recommend going down there unless you had at least $200 a day to spend without feeling guilty.
Damn. What about their gas? Is it expensive?
The what?
The gas.
The gas is like Canada. It's by the liter. So it's like, I think it was like 5 and change per liter. So you're looking at, you know, to get a little over a gallon, which would be 4 liters, right? You're looking at big bucks. Yeah.
Damn.
It's expensive. Let me see. My friend drove a little Suzuki that doesn't even have a hatchback. It's shaped like a Jeep. They don't sell them in America. It's
right.
A 4-cylinder, and it cost her $70 to fill. So what does that tell you? But minimum wage over there is $16 an hour. That's where you stop because the money is totally different. So the people of the island, they make their money. They're able to survive and stuff. It's just like when you vacation over there. You know, we brought a good amount of money with us, and, you know, I came back with, I think it was $10 in my pocket. And I already went and opened up another savings account to keep putting money in it for next year's trip because we're definitely going down during Cup Match, and she wants to stay longer. She's like looking at, she said, 10 days to 14 days to come down. And I want to have at least anywhere between $150 to $200 a day to be comfortable because I'll be able to drink then, so, you know.
Right.
That could be interesting.
At least you had your time away. You had fun. It was a little pricey, but hey, it's cool, you know.
Well, like
next
I told
time,
you.
Get the highest on the sunblock that they have and waterproof. Ugh.
No, next time what we're doing, and this is cool about the island people. Like I told you, it's all resorts, but all the resorts, the jacuzzis, the pool, their beachfront is all open to anybody in Bermuda. You do not have to stay in a resort to sit by their poolside and go enjoy their beach. That's open to everybody. And that came into effect when the economy went bad because they figured if the native people to Bermuda would start going to the resorts and stuff, maybe having a cocktail, maybe having a lunch or a brunch or whatever, that, again, brings money into these places. So next time we're going for a full day at the spa, you pay at the spa, I think she said it's like $150, and you're there for 8 hours. You get done from head to toe, and then you're allowed to have complimentary cocktails and sit poolside. And I'm like, yeah, I'll pay $150 for that. Absolutely. Yeah, so, you know, she's booking us an appointment, not the day we come down, but the next day after. So we'll be, like, shining and primed for Cup Match. It'll be all good.
There you go. Hey, we're down to the last 20 seconds. I'm going to play Jovi, and we'll talk to you guys Thursday.
All right, Kobe. Have a great night.
All right, good night.
Good night.